ಸಹನಾವತು ಸಹನೌ ಭುನಕ್ತು ಸಹ ವೀರ್ಯಂ ಕರವಾವಹೈ ತೇಜಸ್ವಿನಾವಧೀತಮಸ್ತು ಮಾ ವಿದ್ವಿಷಾವಹೈಃ. ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿಃ. ಚೈತನ್ಯಂ ಸರ್ವಗಂ ಸರ್ವಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಗುಹಾಶಯನ್ ಯತ್ ಸರ್ವವಿಷಯಾತೀತಂ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಸರ್ವವಿದೇ ನಮಃ. ಓಂ. Very good. Welcome back, and welcome to the students watching these classes online. We will continue with our study of Shankara's Upadesha Sahasri. There's one comment, one question that came to me by email from the last class. In the class, I had said, if you are still compelled by desire, you're not quite there yet. It sounds like my language. And the writer says that, but I tremendously enjoy many things in life. I like to make music and do sports, go to wild parties. Good for you, why not? That's what he says. Sounds good. And also, I don't want to do nothing at all and just be like a vegetable. Good. Be engaged. Absolutely. But the question is, how do I know if these things my body and mind enjoys are still desires? So the word desire is vague, and that's why I often use the nomenclature raga and dvesha. Raga is a compelling desire. Dvesha is a compelling need to run away from something. My guru used different language. He and very helpful language. He called them binding desires and non-binding desires. And that language is really good. It ties it also to the word desire. A binding desire is raga and dvesha, which means, you know, if it's not fulfilled, it bothers you, and you feel that compulsion to do it if at all possible. That's the binding. So what he called binding desires are raga dvesha. Then what he called non-binding desires are not a problem. Anything that you want, if you can't have it, and if it's not a problem, it's not a problem. It's that simple. If the absence of fulfilling a desire doesn't bother you at all, it certainly is not a binding desire. In fact, some authors will call it preference and make a distinction between a desire and a preference. So you can have thousands. Now, here's an interesting contrast. My guru made this contrast many times. You can have thousands of non-binding desires that are all unfulfilled, and you can be perfectly content, right? That's the nature of non-binding desires. But if you have one binding desire that is currently unfulfilled, it can bother you. So this is the distinction then between binding and non-binding desires. My guru went on then to say that what Vedanta does, and this is a very clever way of putting it. He said, what Vedanta does is to convert all, this is his exact words, to convert binding desires into non-binding desires. That's brilliant. And that's truly what Vedanta ends up doing, converting those binding desires into non-binding desires. Okay, let's come back to our text. We have just finished the topic on kṛta kṛtyatā, the state of enlightenment in which there's absolutely nothing more that needs to be done, a state of completeness, a state of perfection. Now we move on to the next topic. Shankara comes right back to the main focus, which we can call atma-vichara, self-inquiry, and we'll pick up the thread here. This is verse 17. Nyaturgneya paro hyatma, nyaturgneya paro hyatma, so vidya kalpita smritaha, so vidya kalpita smritaha, apodhe vidyaya tasmin, apodhe vidyaya tasmin, rajvam sarpahivadvayaha, rajvam sarpahivadvayaha. Paraha hi atma, often translated the supreme self. Sounds good. But para atma means, in fact, let's be careful not to turn it into some kind of mystical thing or some kind of philosophical concept. Para atma, the so-called supreme self, is the consciousness present in your experience right now. Isn't that interesting? When you use this language, para-atma, it's the language makes it seem so remote and so lofty. But the fact is, it is the consciousness present in your experience right now. And if you say, well, wait a minute, how can this consciousness be para-atma? Good, that's the right question. That's what we're investigating through these teachings of Vedanta. But at the beginning, we don't want to make this mistake, a mistake that many people make, and that is thinking that para-atma, the so-called supreme self, is something that you need to reach, you need to attain, you need to experience. You already are that, which is a central teaching of Advaita Vedanta. So here, Shankara observes that para-atma, that so-called supreme self, jñeyaha. Some people think that it is jñeyaha, something that you have to know, something that you have to experience. Who has to experience? Jñātuhu, by the knower. It is an object to be known. This is what Shankara is saying. Some people think that para-atma is an object to be known, like you know so many other objects in the world. Para-atma is one more object to be known, only this is an object that's not known outside. This is an object that's known inside, in particular during meditation. This is such a common misunderstanding. People think that one day in deep meditation, Atma will rise from the depths like a thousand shining suns in your meditation, as bright, blinding light. One guru called it a blue pearl. It will appear like this blue orb in your meditation. We've discussed this before. Most of you see the fallacy here. That blue pearl or that blinding light is known to whom? That one is the conscious self. It's known to consciousness. It is an object of consciousness, an object known to consciousness, and anything known is not you. You are the conscious knower, the conscious observer, the conscious subject. Anything known to you is an object and necessarily an atma. You are atma, the conscious self. Anything known to you is anatma, an object of some kind. So to the bottom line here is anything that is an object of knowledge. That's too abstract. Anything known to you is not atma, because atma is your true nature. But the problem is, many people have this idea, especially with regard to meditation, that atma is to be discovered in meditation, and will somehow you will experience atma in meditation. Shankara says very plainly, saha, that concept, avidya kalpitaha, is an imagination based on ignorance. You imagine that due to ignorance. You believe it to be so. He says, smritaha, it's something you remember. Perhaps it's something you've been told and you accepted as being true without thinking about it. How many spiritual seekers are given this instruction? You have to meditate deeply to allow Atma to reveal itself in your meditative experience. How many spiritual seekers have been wrongly instructed in that manner? It's sad. What else to say? It's an instruction which puts them in an entirely wrong direction. So, this, then Shankara continues, apodhe vidyaya tasmin apodhe. When that wrong concept, the concept that Atma one day will reveal itself to you in meditation, or that Atma is some object to be known, he says, tasmin apodhe, when that wrong concept is dismissed, when it is negated. Negated how? Vidyaya, by knowledge. Avidya, ignorance, is negated by vidya, knowledge. When that wrong concept is negated, then what remains, last word, advayaha, what remains is non-dual reality, which is your true nature, but what it remains such, eva, like rajvam sarpaha, like the snake that has been projected on the rope. Our famous Vedantic story, always talking, Vedanta loves the metaphor of the rope snake. You know it very well. I won't explain it. So knowledge removes the rope. Knowledge removes the snake. Now, what's significant about that is the snake is a problem. You see that snake, you jump, you scream. The snake is a problem. How is that problem removed? Get a big stick and kill the snake? That problem is removed through knowledge of the rope. In the same way, this wrong concept, any wrong concept about yourself is a source of suffering. I want to be a little bit more precise here. Due to ignorance of the rope, you imagine a snake, and that snake is a problem. Due to ignorance of your true nature, you imagine many things about yourself. And those things are a source of suffering. In the most obvious sense, when you imagine that I am an embodied being, and when this body dies, I die, that is a wrong concept which causes suffering. And that wrong concept, I am this body, is a product of ignorance. Or take it in a more psychological sense. many people have problems with self-esteem. And they have this concept, I am useless, or I am somehow defective. That, too, is a wrong assumption based on ignorance. Consciousness is not useless. Consciousness is not defective. All of these are problems in the mind. Tell me, who has a mind that's completely free from problems? Every person struggles with problems. But to conclude that these problems are essential to who I am is a wrong conclusion that makes you suffer. So this is the foundation on which Vedanta's solution is built. Solution, remember, solution to the problem of suffering. You've heard me say many times, Vedanta is not a philosophy. Vedanta is a solution to the problem of suffering. And the way it works is by removing ignorance of your true nature, all the wrong conclusions about yourself that make you suffer, they get removed. Like when you remove ignorance of the rope, the snake goes away. Okay, enough said. Then. Kartrik karma phala bhavat. Kartrik karma phala bhavat. Sabahyabhyantaram hyajam. Sabahyabhyantaram hyajam. Mamaham cheti yo bhavas. Mamaham cheti yo bhavas. Tasmin kasya kuto bhavet. Tasmin kasya kuto bhavet. Start in the second line. We've seen this expression. Sa bahya abhyantaram hi ajam. You might remember that is Shankara quoting from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. He seems to quote from that Upanishad again and again and again. Other sources as well, but so far mostly from that particular Upanishad. And this statement that he quotes, and he just picks up a few words, assuming you know the whole passage. He just assumes that. So that whole passage describes Atma as being pure consciousness, without boundaries, without limits, vast, all-pervasive, uncreated, unchanging, and all of that is indicated by these few words, sabahya bhyantaram, that which is inside and outside, all-pervasive, and ajam, that which is uncreated. And then the passage goes on. There are many, many more words in that passage. So, Satchidananda Atma as uncreated, unchanging consciousness, that is the essence of who you are. Now, what about that consciousness? In the first line, Shankara says, Kartra Karma Phala Abhavat. Because that consciousness has the nature of abhavat, because it doesn't have the nature of being kartra, agent of action, your consciousness is not an agent of action. Your consciousness doesn't do anything. You remember, just maybe a class or two ago, I said, your consciousness did not come to class this morning, nor did it decide to come to class this morning. That whole decision-making process and the act of coming here, it's all done by your body and mind, and it is that process is revealed to you by consciousness. Consciousness reveals the actions of your body and mind without being directly engaged in those actions. That's important to understand at exactly that point. So Shankara makes this observation, and that is that consciousness is not engaged in action. Karma, consciousness is not an object. We'll leave it as object. So karma, what we said in the first verse, karma here, by the way, means object. And it's grammatical language. I think kartra is a grammatical term, karma is a grammatical term. In grammar, karma means object. Like if there's an objective case, he, him, she, it is an objective case. Anyway, don't worry about it. So karma means object here. Atma is not an agent of action, nor is Atma a object that you can know in meditation, nor is Atma a phala, a result. It is uncaused, uncreated. That word ajam, unborn, means uncaused, uncreated. So this consciousness, which is your true nature. The beautiful word used in many texts is asanga, not involved, detached, and detached in a healthy sense. There's such a thing as unhealthy detachment, but this is a case of healthy detachment, where you know that this body and mind is present in my experience, but yet, whatever happens to my body and mind happens to my body and mind and not to me. That's the point. So this is what I'm calling healthy detachment. And based on this understanding of Atma being a Sangha, uninvolved, unconnected, disconnected. And when I use these words, I pause because these words often have a negative connotation. If somebody is disconnected, it means he's emotionally aloof and he doesn't care. But that's the so-called unhealthy detachment. Here we're talking about a healthy, in fact, in the next verse or two, I think we'll talk about this much more, the difference between healthy attachment and unhealthy attachment. So let's set that aside and continue here for now. So for that Atma, which is not an agent of action, which is not something to be known, which is unborn, uncreated, we're talking about a reality which is not a worldly reality. And we could actually say an otherworldly reality. Atma is not one of the things in the world. You can't say there is one table, there is one chair, there's one body, and there happens to be Atma also. No, it is not another thing in the world. Philosophers like to use the word transcendent. It is a transcendent reality, a reality that's at a different level than this world of names and forms. Now, what is the consequence of that? In a second half, Shankara says, chait iti, in the third line, suppose yaha bhavaha, suppose there is this bhava, this feeling of what? Mama and aham. Mama is a Sanskrit pronoun, mine. Aham, a Sanskrit pronoun, I. I and mine. I and mine. I refers to me as an individual being here, and mine, this possessiveness that people have, Or let me reinterpret these words, I and mine, because it's a little abstract here. Generally, we conceive of ourselves, that I, as being an agent of action, karta. And that mama, that mine, usually we think of ourselves as the one who enjoys our possessions, our experiences. So I want to introduce these two words, karta, agent, and bhokta, experiencer. These are really important terms in Advaita Vedanta, because it's common that we at first consider ourselves to be both karta, agent of action, and bhokta, experiencer. Literally, bhokta means enjoyer, but enjoyer is a little narrow sense, so I prefer the word experiencer. So, I am that aham and mama then refers to the fact that I might see myself as an agent of action, karta, and as an experiencer. How does pure consciousness do either of those things? We just said, asangaha, distant, detached, unaffected. And, hold off, I've got a metaphor coming up to share with you in the next verse. Just hold on, it should be fun, I hope. So Shankara here then concludes, how could that be? Kasya, for how could, and kutaha, kasya and kutaha, how and for whom could that doer of action and experiencer of experiences, how could it exist with reference to Atma, your true self, which is asanga? You know, let me give you the metaphor now. It's going to come in the next verse anyway. This is a metaphor that personally I find very helpful. It was a metaphor that you won't find in any traditional scripture. Why will you not find this metaphor in any traditional scripture? Because it's based on watching a movie or watching a television. Because they, in ancient times, there were no televisions and movie theaters. But if there were, I'm sure they would have used this as a metaphor. Here's the point. When you watch a movie, what is your relationship to the activities in that movie? Now, the answer actually is, it depends. But oftentimes, people get identified with the characters of the movie, so that whatever happens to the characters feels like it's happening to you, right? Yeah, have you ever, you're identified with a character in a movie, and that character gets shot, and you and you have a moment of shock. This is identification with the movie. And of course, that's why we enjoy movies, but we're using it now as a metaphor. Does it really affect you? Whatever happens in the movie affects you not in the least. There's a nice way to understand that word asanga. Literally, sangha means connected. Asanga, without connection, without related, unrelated. Interesting. There's no one English word that has exactly the same feeling as the Sanskrit word asanga. So I'm just trying out various things here. but that idea of healthy detachment. And healthy detachment means, in fact, you do this anyway, if you're watching a movie and it's a really gruesome scene, what do? I actually, it may be different for different people. Some people like gruesome scenes. I don't understand this genre of horror films and movies. Some people love that. I don't understand it, but if they love it, it's fine. There's no problem. But oftentimes, if something happens in a movie that is so unsettling, you find it unpleasant, many people will detach from the movie and just maybe turn your eyes away, close your eyes, remind yourself that it's only a movie. You detach from the movie. Moments before, you were identified with the movie and its characters, but you can willfully disidentify, willfully detach yourself from what's happening in the movie. You, after all, are not a character in a movie. You're at home sitting in your chair, watching a movie on your TV. Look at the distance between you sitting in your chair and then the TV. And then there's further distance, the distance between your television set and the sound stage in Hollywood or Bollywood where the movie was produced. So there's tremendous distance involved between you and that movie. Now, when you're really... There's an American expression I like to use. When you're really sucked in, you know that feeling? Sometimes movies will draw you in. It's as though you are sucked into the movie. In fact, that's a sign of an effective movie, right? It draws you in, it engages you, you become sucked in. For a movie, it's okay. What happens in life is we are sucked in to the drama of life. We have no sense of distance. And we suffer. Healthy detachment is a little bit like being in the movie theater, sitting on your chair, and you still know it's a movie. You watch the movie, you understand what's going on. You might even allow yourself to get drawn in and participate emotionally in that movie, but you never, ever lose sight of the fact it's just a movie. That is a metaphor for the healthy detachment I'm describing with this word. Atma is asangaha. It means instead of being sucked in to the drama of life, and life is certainly dramatic, right? There's drama at home, there's drama at the workplace, wherever you go, there's some kind of drama going on. Suppose you were to develop a healthy detachment from that worldly drama. Healthy detachment means, healthy detachment doesn't mean you run away from it. So healthy detachment doesn't mean you run out of the movie theater or turn off your TV. Healthy detachment means you stay engaged in the drama, knowing it's a drama, and a drama that doesn't affect you in any essential way. This is such an important teaching, which is why I'm really emphasizing it here. A common expression that's used, to be in the world but not of the world. I'm not sure exactly what that's intended to mean, but it suggests what we're talking about, and that is to be engaged in the drama of life without being totally sucked in, without losing yourself in that drama, means always recognizing that the drama is out there in a very real sense with regard to consciousness. Drama is out there. And further, your consciousness being unchanging, something we've talked about at great length, your consciousness being unchanging, you are utterly unaffected by that drama. Like you're utterly unaffected by the movie, you are utterly unaffected by this drama. Be in the drama, be engaged in a drama without being sucked in to the drama, without losing yourself in the drama. This is what we call healthy attachment. And that is what Shankara suggests here. Let's continue. Atma hyatmiya hityesha, atma hyatmiya hityesha, bhavo vidya prakalpitaha, bhavo vidya prakalpitaha, atmaikatve hyasau nasti, atmaikatve hyasau nasti, bija bhave kuta phala. Bija bhave kuta phalam. Atma, he, atmiya. Atma here means I, aham. So be ready. The word atma is used in so many ways. Here, atma means the same as the pronoun aham. And atmiya, literally what belongs to atma, means mine. So we're talking about I and mine, once again, using different words. So instead of using aham and mama, Shankara uses atma and atmiya. And if you say, why? Why not? Yeah, he's the author, he's entitled to do whatever he wants, and to use, and you already know in writing, to use the same words again and again and again is not elegant. In fact, when I write scripts for my videos, and the earliest scripts are kind of rough, I give them to Vasanti to proofread. And whenever I'm using the same word again and again and again, she'll circle those words. So some variety is helpful in good quality writing. Anyway, instead of using aham and mama, I and mine, Shankara uses atma and atmiya. Iti eshaha bhavaha. This feeling of I and mine, this feeling of being an agent of action and being an experiencer of experiences, that feeling of being sucked in to the drama, totally sucked into the drama, Shankara says, this is avidya prakalpitaha. This is a projection of ignorance. He uses the same words he's used in two verses before. Shankara's repeating himself, and that's unusual. Which means, if Shankara is repeating himself, it means he is figuratively shouting at us, pay attention! He's saying it a second time. It must be that important that he says it again. It's like someone in an email who writes all caps. They're shouting at you and to get your attention. So Shankara is doing the equivalent here by using the same expression he used two verses ago. He's shouting at us, pay attention, this is important. These are problems born of ignorance, Not just any ignorance, ignorance of your true self, which means if the problem is the result of ignorance, the solution is knowledge, which is what he says in the second half. He says, Atma ekatve hi asau nasti. Atma ekatve. And this is a little Shankara is almost speaking in shorthand here. So the commentator adds some words in. Atma eva jnate sati. When Atma is known. When Atma is known, asau nasti. Those wrong conceptions of being a doer of action, an experiencer of experiences, it goes away. Go back to that movie metaphor. When you feel like you are in the movie, and everything that happens in the movie is almost happening to you, that is, you find yourself an agent of action in the movie and an experiencer of whatever is happening in the movie. You are sucked in completely, meaning that the director did a good job. But when you're drawn into the drama of daily life, it's different. You can easily appreciate that. So Shankara says, this problem is born of ignorance, ignorance in particular of your true nature, and bija abhave, when the seed doesn't exist, kutaha palam, how can there be fruit? Now, he's not giving us a lesson on agriculture, obviously. So seed and fruit are very common metaphorical terms. Seed is the cause for the fruit. When there is no cause, there is no effect. Here, like here, the cause, here, the effect we're talking about is suffering. And that suffering occurs when you get totally sucked in to the drama of life. That is the cause, I'm sorry, that is the effect. Its cause is ignorance. In particular, ignorance of your true nature as asanga atma, as the consciousness, which is healthily detached from the drama of life. When you remove the ignorance, suffering goes away. All right. Now these two verses go together. I think we can squeeze them in here. Drashtra shrotra tata mantra. Drashtra Shrotra tata mantra vignatrevataraksharam vignatrevataraksharam drashtradyanyanatadyasmat drashtyadyanyantadayasmat tasmadrashtahamaksharam tasmadrashtahamaksharam. Nice language he uses. Who are you? So, fundamentally, you are pure, unchanging consciousness. Except when you're totally sucked in to the drama of life. When you're totally sucked into the drama of life, you're not pure consciousness. When you meet someone for the first time, do you introduce yourself, hello, I am pure consciousness? You get my point. So in the drama of life, we all play roles. What kind of roles? Drashtra, seer. Shrotra, hearer. Mantra, thinker. Vignatra, knower. These are roles assumed by consciousness. Consciousness takes on these different roles. Consciousness, because of consciousness, you are a drashtra, seer. You see me because of consciousness. Because of consciousness, you are a shrotra, hearer. You hear me because of consciousness. You are a mantra, vijñatra. You know what I'm talking about because of consciousness. Consciousness with this role, a role based on your senses and mind. Now, it's significant to call them role because if we were to visit that sound stage in Hollywood or Bollywood and meet these great actors, the actors who play the role, do you think they forget it's a role? It's a role. They're a role that they play very skillfully, but it's still a role. If what is his name? Amit Bachchan? Amitabh Bachchan. I've seen some of these movies. So when he's playing the role of like a, I don't know what role does he play. I don't know. Suppose he is, does he play negative roles ever? No, only positive roles. Okay. So see, that much I know. So suppose his role is a king. So in between takes on the set, do you think he acts like a king? Actually, he might. I don't know, but that's a whole different story. He doesn't really think he's a king. You know, he doesn't. He goes home to his wife, and you probably know who she is. Anyway, he doesn't go home and pretend he's a king. Being a king is a role. He doesn't forget it's a role. And that's a problem for us, is we forget. Not forget is not the right word. Due to ignorance, we fail to discern that all of these are roles. Right now, being a seer, hearer, and thinker are roles of your consciousness. Your consciousness, associated with your mind and senses, takes on these various roles. No problem, as long as you know they're just roles. Otherwise, when there's a problem in the role, it becomes your problem. For example, if there's a problem with your eyesight, your power of hearing, or when there's a problem with your mind, when you're identified with them, it causes suffering. What's happening to my eyesight? Why can't I hear as good as I did when I was young? What's wrong with my mind? You're identified with a role. You are that unchanging consciousness, which in the end of the second line, Shankara calls aksharam, immutable, unchanging consciousness. You are the unchanging consciousness who takes on these various roles. Drashtra adi anyat natat yasmat. Yasmat, because. Tat, that unchanging consciousness, your unchanging consciousness, because it is drashtra Yadi na anyat, because it is non-separate. The role is non-separate from the actor. Is Amitabh Bachchan Amitabh Bachchan? Is he standing here and the king is standing there? No. They are one and the same. In the same way, for you, the seer, hearer, and thinker are all expressions of consciousness. There is only that consciousness. one consciousness with many roles, one Bachchan who plays many roles. You get the point. Okay, so Shankara says, because that is the case, that your unchanging consciousness plays all these roles, he says, then tasmat, therefore, aham, I am that drashtra, that seer, which is aksharam, a role of consciousness. I am that unchanging consciousness which takes the role of being seer, hearer, the role of being agent of action. Also a role. I'm doing. Or experiencer. Karta and bhokta. I am experiencing what's happening here. Mind is engaged in experience. Consciousness takes on that role of experiencer. Now I want to take the next verse because it's closely connected. Let's chant it and then I'll explain how it's connected. Stavaram jangamam chaiva, stavaram jangamam chaiva, drashtritvadi kriyayutam, drashtritvadi kriyayutam, sarvam aksharame vataha, sarvame vataha, sarvasyatmaksharam tvaham, sarvasyatmaksharam tvaham. Closely related. Consciousness takes on the role of being seer, hearer, etc. for you. Consciousness takes on the role of seer and hearer for me. Are those consciousnesses separate? In fact, it feels strange even to use the word consciousness in plural. Consciousnesses. We've discussed here too many times how what you call your consciousness is not yours at all. There is one all-pervasive consciousness manifest in your mind, manifest in my mind, manifest in all living beings, all sentient beings. So here we're going to make a transition between the prior verse where we're talking about your consciousness, consciousness with regard to your senses and mind. But that same consciousness is related to all sense organs and all minds. So we now make a transition from the individual to the collective. In Greek, from the microcosm to the macrocosm. In Sanskrit, from vyashti to samashti. These are the terms. Vyashti is that individual perspective. Samashti is the whole perspective, the big, big picture. So now Shankara says here, stavaram jangamam cha eva. Anything that is stavaram, unmoving, like this chair, or jangamam, moving, like this body. All of these things are drashtritvadi kriya yutam. They are all yutam, endowed with kriya, the powers, powers like being drashtra, seer, hearer. Interesting that he says stavaram. So we can't take stavaram in the sense of chair, because chair is not a seer, hearer, or thinker. So stavaram can also refer to living things that don't move, like trees, like barnacles, I don't know. So non-moving living things. We have to take stavaram in that sense. If you ask me, how does a tree How does a tree see and hear? I don't know. You have to ask the tree. But the tree is a living thing, so we suppose it has some faculties at its disposal. So Shankara says here, for everything that is moving, every living thing that moves or doesn't move, they are all endowed with faculties, like sight and hearing. And he concludes, third line, and ataha, therefore, sarvam aksharam. Therefore, all of that occurs because of aksharam, that word that means immutable, but in our current context, we mean unchanging consciousness. The same consciousness by which my thoughts are known is the same consciousness by which your thoughts are known. And if a tree or barnacle can have thoughts, I don't know, but those thoughts are known by that same consciousness. Therefore, he concludes here, sarvasya atma, the atma of all, the consciousness manifest in all sentient beings, that which is aksharam, that unchanging consciousness, to aham, I am, that unchanging, all-pervasive consciousness manifest in all sentient beings. So the earlier verse talked about your perspective, and then this verse talks about the global perspective. Good place to end. We'll continue next week. Oh, important announcement I'll make before we conclude. Next week on Saturday, there's some rituals that are supposed to be performed when you're 70. This one is now 70. So those rituals will be performed next Saturday. We'll have a simple program. The rituals will be followed. Then I'll give some message after the ritual. So if you want to come at 10 o'clock for that program. And then the following day, which means next Sunday, is the day of Deepavali. Many of you will be celebrating at home, so we will not have classes next Sunday. So next Sunday, we take a break from this class and continue then the next week. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om. Very good. We will pause here.